Follow Chicago's home for sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Hanley and Zander, ESPN 1000, here till 12:30, where Tyler Aki picks up things with the pregame show. And then Connor McNutt on the play-by-play here on ESPN 1000 with DJ today as the first pitch against the Rangers is thrown at 1:10, trying to win the second game of the three-game series. Yesterday was within reach, and it was a mess. Lots to talk about if you want to jump in. 312-332-3776. Talking about the Cubs, too, and your very first concert. Now, Brian, you were on Twitter, and you responded to somebody. And, you know, when you're on Twitter, you see somebody that you're connected to respond to something. Then I jumped on, and it was a good point to see what everybody else wants to say as far as, you know, their first concert. Your very first concert was in the bicentennial year of 1976.
16-year-old, just got my driver's license. I don't know, my parents were, you know, why they let me drive the
International Amphitheater. And what a lucky man you were.
Yeah, there you go. C'est la vie. At the ELP, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, at the International Amphitheater, which, you know, near the stockyards, and you can smell
that fine smell.
Yeah. And can't you smell that smell, the smell that surrounds you. And I actually saw Steve Martin there after that.
Was he the wild and crazy guy?
Yeah, with the arrow on his head. The last row watching stand-up comedy from a mile away.
And he filled that place, didn't he, at that time?
He absolutely
did. He was huge, absolutely huge.
I saw him at some school or church out in Elmhurst, I want to say, when he was first starting. And after the show, he continued on the show, on the steps, and outside he was directing traffic. And, I mean, he was just a wild and crazy guy, just killing time because he could. And I mean, sold me at that point. We were all just standing out there as he put on another act of a show while we thought we were leaving. And then next thing I know, he's filling stadiums and arenas. But, yeah, we'd love 312-332-3776 to hear what your first concert was, where it was, and, you know, your memories of that. Because, you know, you, Mr. Zander, are a huge music guy. It's become your livelihood.
Yeah, for many, many years. And, and I, you know, mine wasn't really that impressive. And here's the thing. I have a lot of cousins on my father's side. And older cousins. And I remember one of them saying, do you want to go see the band Chicago? I must have been 10, 9 years old. So this would be mid 70s. And as my memory goes,
were you 29 or 6'4"?
I was all of those. And so when I was about to ask my mom, my mom said no. So I would have been able to see the band Chicago in the mid-70s when they were on top.
At the Chicago Stadium. My older brother, one of the biggest Chicago fans ever, still goes to see him. I think he just saw him a month or two ago. And, you know, he was at the old stadium when they were huge, and he's followed whatever iteration is left of them at this point.
Right. They're like three members. But I would have seen it with Terry Kath was still alive.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I missed that chance. But I actually saw there was a local band in the early 80s that had some radio hits. They were big here, the Hounds. And they redid Ruby Tuesday from the Stones. I saw them at Marist High School in 1981. And that was my first concert. But then I went on to see a crazy amount, so many that I can't even possibly remember all of them. But one sticks out that I missed. And this is another subject. What did you have a chance to go see and you missed? A friend of mine said he was at my front door, knocking at the door, trying to give me a ticket to see Van Halen, my favorite band, in 1981, which was Bullseye. And I wasn't home. It still bothers me today, 41 years later.
And you didn't have cell phones back then. He could just call you and track you down.
No, no, it's like, ring the bell. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Find me.
And check your location?
What?
Check your location?
Yeah, check your location, something. But, yeah, that was way ahead of technology. And
hey, Jake, what was your first concert and where?
So we're going to go 2013,
okay, all the way back to 2013.
I was a late bloomer. 2013, I think my mom took me to go see Justin Timberlake at American Airlines Center. Yep, JT,
an entertainer. Yeah.
Did you have good seats?
Oh, great seats. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, Hanley, he puts on a show, right?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Dancing heavily throughout the full 2-3 hours.
Any nip slip in that one?
Ooh.
Easy,
I don't think so, yeah. Okay.
No, there was no wardrobe malfunction.
No, not on that one. Jim is in Aurora. Hey, Jim, first concert, where was it? Who'd
yes,
you see?
Guys, so, okay, we're going way back. It was 1974, the International Amphitheater, 35th and Halsted, the night before
there.
My ACT test.
Oh, boy.
Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath.
Oh, 74, Black Sabbath. Wow.
The warm-up band was an English band called Slade.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Slade and Flame.
Yeah. Mama, we're all crazy now. Yes,
how'd you do on the ACT test? Just curious.
I had to retake it.
And that's a good reason. That's a very solid good reason, Jim.
I didn't go to college because of Black Sabbath.
Okay. No, I had to retake it to qualify.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. We appreciate that. Yeah. Again, that's a solid reason in my book. My son came up and said, hey, you know, I have to retake the ACT because, you know, that Judas Priest concert I went to.
Okay,
that's all right. Retake it.
Somewhere out there today or this week, you know, they're going to go see Lamb of God and they're going to screw up their ACT test. So.
Yeah, Lamb of God. Yes.
Yeah, being Catholic, I don't know I can go there.
No, you can. I'm not sure that's allowed. 312-332-3776. You went to see ELP. Did somebody bring you to that show? Were you wanting to go?
I wore that out, that album out.
Your favorite ELP song then?
Oh boy, I mean, welcome back to my friends to the show.
Oh, Carnival Number 9.
Yeah, they opened the show with that, and they came through the stage floor. I mean, that was high tech back then, right?
Yeah,
they came out.
The organ came up. Keith Emerson's organ, right?
Yeah. And easy. And yeah.
How big was it, Brian?
I didn't have great seats like Jake. But yeah, C'est La Vie, I mean, it was so far back. But I wore that album out. I wanted to go. I dragged some friends. Matter of fact, one of my friends didn't see much of the show because his head was between his knees because he had had too many beverages, even though we were 16.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rookie. 312-332-3776.
I called you a youngster because your first one was in 81.
81, so. Right. I have 5 years removed from you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I should have caught that concert in the 70s, Chicago, Terry Kath, who, by the way, was a guitarist that Jimi Hendrix heralded as the best guitarist he had ever seen.
Wow. Never knew that.
Yeah, because Chicago opened up for Hendrix, and Jimmy was blown away by Terry. And if you listen to some early, the CTA album, the very first album.
Sure. Chicago Terry Transit Authority.
Terry Kath was unbelievable. Jimi Hendrix was also very impressed by a guy named Billy Gibbons, who he eventually had a very long beard and fronts the band ZZ Top as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Bill in Naperville jumping in, wants to talk about his first concert. Hey, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Where was it and who'd you see?
It was at the Erie Crown Theater in the original McCormick Place.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones, 1966.
What?
Oh, my word.
You saw the Stones at Erie Crown?
Oh. Yes.
Wow.
That was the first time they came to Chicago.
Wow.
Wow. That's like seeing Springsteen
Holy
at the Uptown.
Cow. Do you have good memory? I mean, are you able to remember enough to be able to celebrate that you went at this point?
It was probably in July or August, because I remember I was had a summer job downtown, and back in those days, you had to go to Marshall Fields to that ticket something or other to buy the tickets.
Carson Prairie Scott, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I ran over there on my lunch hour one day and got four tickets, and it was either in July or August.
They were probably $5 each, if that.
Oh, you had to stand in line.
They might have been about 15.
Oh. Was it Ticketron? You had to stand in line in front of record stores and stuff like that.
Sure.
That's what it was. Yep.
Absolutely. I think it was Carson Perry Scott, if I remember.
It could have been.
The Erie Crown is still there. No one uses it.
No, they don't. I have seen one or two shows, but
I have two. I think the last time
I was at the Erie Crown, it was in the '80s for sure. They don't use it anymore, which is kind of strange. Al in Portage Park. Everybody wants to jump in on this one. Hey, Al, first concert. Where was it? Who'd you see?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So, Sandra, you might be able to help me on this, but my first concert was. My mother took my sister and I to Chicago Fest to see Chicago and Orleans opened for him, and I don't remember if it was like 80 or 81, something like that.
I would imagine, I would, without looking back, I'm going to take a solid guess because Orleans had a big hit in 77, 78. So around
Dance
there,
With Me, right?
Yeah, Dance With Me, and then also Still the One.
Yep.
Dance With Me was 76. Still the One was like 77, 78. So we're talking late 70s, Chicago Fest, Navy Pier, right?
Yes.
That's probably it.
So my Chicago Fest story on Navy Pier, it was probably either when I was in school at Marquette or just out, but it was the summer because of Chicago Fest and Navy Pier.
Thanks, Al.
Charlie Daniels Band, because I really liked what was then, you know, country southern rock.
Yes.
Marshall Tucker Band, loved them, loved Charlie Daniels. And that same night, walked down the pier to see Frank Sinatra do a show.
I think at the ballroom at the end? Or I don't know if the ballroom was even fixed up.
No, he was outdoors. It gets worse. So I think they paid him $250,000, which was huge money.
Yes, it was.
He sang for like an hour, right? And everyone's on their feet, you know, demanding an encore, cheering and applauding. And I swear to God, we saw the private plane leave Migs Field. He was on his way back to Vegas like 10 minutes after the show. He wasn't coming out. He was counting his money on his jet.
I will do no such encore.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here, baby.
I mean, the fact that I saw Charlie Daniels and then like an hour later I saw Old Blue Eyes.
Now that is a concert bill.
Right?
That's insane. The phones are absolutely loaded. Let's take another one here. Bert in Aurora, first concert. What'd you see and where at, Bert? Hey, Bert.
Yeah.
Hey, Bert.
You're on the air.
All right. Yeah, my first concert was August 5th, 1977 at Old Comiskey Park.
Was that World Series of Rock or something?
Chicago Jam 2, I think it was.
Yeah, Chicago Jam, yeah.
And it was Aerosmith was headlining, and Foreigner was second, and AC/DC wasn't even known of then.
No, they weren't.
They blew everybody away.
Yeah, of course they did. Of course they did. Bon Scott led AC/DC at the point.
Frank Marino, Mahogany Rush.
Mm-hmm. Canadian
and,
guy?
Walter Egan, he was the one-hit wonder.
Yeah, Magnet and Steel.
Yeah, you are the Magnet, I have the Steel. I used to sleep out for tickets at Sears.
Yeah, Sears was another place, right? Carson Peary Scott, yeah, Sears. You had Ticketmaster and Ticketron. Yeah,
we used to sleep out overnight at Fox Valley Mall.
Yeah. Remember, that was safe. You do that today, Brian?
Yeah.
Well, no. And the
international, you guys went to the International Amphitheater. That was a big place back then. I saw UFO there.
Oh, Rush. Yeah. Did you see the concert that was partly taped for the Strangers in the Night live album? You might have.
No, I don't know.
Because that was at the amphitheater. It was show and shows in Louisville that were used for that album.
You know what?
I saw Triumph. They rocked out.
Yeah.
Really good.
Thank you, Bert. We appreciate Rush. That. Yeah.
You know what really frosted me when you're standing in line outside the record store waiting for tickets or Carson Perry Scott or Sears, you know, Ticketron. You had to be there like we were talking about. Ticket scalpers would pay people to stand in line.
Yeah, right.
And so you were out there, like our caller just said, you know, basically got there at the crack of dawn or some people slept over. And then all of a sudden when the window opened up or the door opened up, here comes a scalper, you know, swooping in and moving his guy out because he paid him. And he's got a, you know, fistful of money and he's going to buy up all the good seats. That really frosted me. But a guy, a White Sox guy who went into the ticket selling business, Eric Soderholm.
Yeah,
he got me tickets.
He used to play third base.
Absolutely. He got me tickets to Springsteen without the E Street Band when he was at the Shed in Tinley Park.
I was at that show, too.
Yeah. And God bless Eric. He didn't charge me over the face value. So because, I knew him because I was at the Sun-Times and all that. And I go sit down with my buddies and we, you know, whatever. And we turn around and Ryan Sandberg and Mike Morgan of the Cubs, who I was covering at the time, were sitting right behind me. They were actually a row behind me. I had better seats than those two guys.
We have the phones are absolutely loaded. So we're going to keep talking about this after the break. First concert, where was it? What did you see? Brian, I'm going to talk about that show that you just brought up, Springsteen without the E Street Band. I decided to see him once, and I saw him without a very important part of the situation. Lucky me. That was the worst. As far as I'm concerned, that was the worst. 312-332-3776. We'll be back right after this.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Hanley and Xander, ESPN 1000. Talking about first concert, and the phones are absolutely loaded. We'll get back to talking about the sports. At that point in my life, my wife, my ex, but she's always been a big Springsteen fan. And finally, we had the chance to go. And I'm a Springsteen fan through the river. Then anything after that, I have no use for. That's just
the first tour I saw him on up at Marquette.
I love all the 70s stuff. Yeah. I can care less about Born in the USA and all that junk. Whatever. So we decide to go see him. And that's when he tells the E Street Band to stay home. And, I mean, of all the concerts to see, I mean, it was okay. But it was the E Street Band. That was the exciting part. That's what I appreciated from the 70s. So I just thought it was really ironic that I was dragged to that concert to see Bruce without the E Street Band. Did you like the show?
There's no junk involved. I like all of it. And as a matter of fact, I just bought tickets for Paris and Rome next May. So
Paris, Illinois, he's playing?
Yeah, no. The actual with the tower and all that. I always swore I'd see him in Europe, and he hasn't toured in 6 years, and I almost went the last tour in Europe. But now, you know.
So obviously, Brian is a super fan of Bruce Springsteen.
Well, yeah, I think I've seen him over 100 times. If I told you how much money I've spent, but traveling and tickets and hotel, I mean,
okay.
I probably need to see somebody other than Springsteen. But that Tinley Park, it takes me a lot to get down there because of the traffic and the in and out and all that. But I just remember that I had better seats than Ryan Sandberg. So.
I was 10 minutes away and I was still upset about being dragged to that show. That was just me. 312-332-3776. Fred in Skokie, first concert you saw, where was it?
It was 2007 at Congress Theater. The band was none other than Lamb of God.
There you go.
Are you going to this one? Are you going to this one?
No, I'm not. I've seen him a few times. But yeah, it was a great show. I remember pulling up on Milwaukee. I was a freshman in high school, and I just remember, like, oh my God, I can hear it from outside. How loud is it going to be in there?
Yeah.
But it was great. It was a great show.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, and I'm sure your ears are still ringing.
I saw Joe Jackson
yes,
there.
They are.
I saw Joe Jackson there for probably 15 years, whatever it was. I think there was a hole in the roof. His dressing room was a mobile home parked out on the street because the place was in tatters. And they had like folding tables with off-brand booze that they're selling in the lobby. I couldn't imagine how it was open. I mean, how the city allowed it to stay open. They had put a dollar in there in 25 years. But I think they've fixed it all up and it's really nice now, right?
I haven't. I'm sure that they have. Haven't been there yet. Maybe he's a nicer guy now. I've never heard on the inside, you know, working in radio. He was
the angry young man.
He's like a Van Morrison. Yeah. You know what? Just like an angry guy. Like,
I saw Van Morrison and he went through that concert like his car was double parked.
Of course he did.
I mean,
I've never heard anything. Look, Van Morrison is a great singer-songwriter, but I've never heard anything about him personally that has supported that he's a nice guy.
Now, I just saw Joe Jackson at the Park West a couple weeks ago, and he is completely mellowed and was almost like a jazz. I mean, the band was outstanding, and he, you know, he reinterpreted a bunch of his songs, which some people don't like.
Kind of a jazzy thing.
I
love that. I love when they do that. Look, there is a time to play it like the radio plays it, but then after a while, take your liberties. It's your song.
And you know what? And he was bantering with the audience, and he was laughing. And
so he sounds like he's a better guy now.
Well, he's mellowed. He's older now. Yeah. And Van Morrison, though, I still hear that people go, you know, I have nephews who love Van Morrison to this day, and they're young, right? They're in high school and stuff, and I'm like, and they want to go see him. I'm telling their parents, you know, brother and sister-in-law, whatever, be careful because you're going to spend a lot of money, and you better catch him on a good night, which might be 1 out of 10.
Be careful right? What you wish for, yeah.
Yeah.
312-332-3776. We got a bunch of them. Let's get through these quick so we can get everybody in. Ray and Gary, first concert. Where at? Who'd you see? Ray.
Hello?
Yeah, Ray, you're on.
Yeah.
First concert,
yeah.
who'd you see?
First concert was 72, Erie Crown Theater, saw the Guess Who. I was in eighth grade, and a friend of mine had tickets, and his dad took us. And that was the beginning of me not missing a concert. My last one is in 93. My best friend drove Frank Beard's Dooley to Rockford from Austin, Texas, with their Harleys.
Oh, yeah?
And I had backstage passes. I got pictures of me with the guys on
That's
their
awesome.
Bikes. And they were on their way to Sturgis.
That's cool. Thanks, Ray. Mr. Beard, the only one that doesn't have a beard in ZZ Top, by
the way. That's
the
irony, right?
Yeah. Dan in Skokie. Who'd you see and where at?
It was 74-75 Grand Rapids, Michigan. The original Genesis. Peter Gabriel, Phil Collins, Steve Hackett.
Oh, with Peter Gabriel. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony Banks.
Wow.
I was underage. We were visiting a family in Michigan. They took me to a concert. Changed my life forever.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, buddy. Let's just keep going. Tom on the north side, who'd you see and where at? Tom.
This is Tom, yeah.
Yeah, who'd you see and where at, buddy?
Whenever they played together, 73 or 74, something like that.
Uh-huh.
I went to the bank and took out like over $100 in savings, went downtown. We had a Ticketron or whatever it was called. And I got 10 tickets for friends and that from high school. We went up and saw Chicago and the Beach Boys. And I still remember it to this day. It was like, wow. So I'm like, it doesn't get better than the C2.
Good for you.
Band.
Yeah, you know, and to see a band so long ago and to still have great memories and very vivid memories.
And they're $10 a piece, that sounded like, yeah.
And
yeah.
I still have the brochure from that show. And I still have, and if I dig through some boxes, I probably still have tickets from that show.
That's awesome. Great. Thank you, Tom. I've tried to save all the stubs that I can, but there's so many shows that I never got them. And now you buy on your phone or you print to something out. There's no more, like, old school tickets.
That's
a shame. Kevin in Northwest Indiana. Who'd you see and where at, buddy? Kevin, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, hi, guys. It was at the Kinetic Playground. I hitched in hitched to Chicago from Northwest Indiana. Got to Clark, stood in line, and saw The Who, and second act was The Kinks. And the opening act was, I think, and God, my memory might be bad, but of course I'm 74, but it may have been The Flock. But
The
I know
Flock,
it was the same band that played my high school graduation.
And what year was this, did you say?
About 70, probably.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Kinetic Playground. What a place. I wish I would have experienced that place myself.
There was nothing like it. I mean, absolutely. And I saw several shows there. All of them were A+. And when the group opening act left the stage, I recognized them from my high school reunion, my high school graduation. But, of course, they looked different. They weren't in suits anymore.
Right.
They had long hair.
And I shouted
at the band as they left the stage. I said, "You guys played my high school graduation, and you sure look different."
Yeah, just like the Beatles went through the transformation. Thank you.
Right. And the drummer turned to my direction. He couldn't see me because I was in the crowd. It was dark. And he spotted me because I'm grinning. I think my teeth shone. And he goes, "So do you." And they left the stage.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. Oh, sorry. We've got so many to get through here.
I saw Ray Davies at the Apollo Theater. I think that's Clark, right? It's no longer there. But he had broken up, you know, the Kinks are broken up. But he did a show where he just told you stories about all the songs, and then he played the songs. And you see a bunch of artists
doing
that now.
That's kind of the way they build those is a night with.
But that was like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It was like the first, and he was doing it in a theater that did plays for the most part. It was like the first time I saw a one-man show. Kind of like Springsteen on Broadway, except it was Davies on Clark.
And that's a different, very cool experience. We'll do a couple more before we take a break and get back to sports here. Mike in Palatine, who'd you see and where at, buddy? You're on ESPN 1000.
Yeah, I saw Led Zeppelin at the Kinetic Playground.
That's what I was waiting for, somebody to say Led Zeppelin at the Kinetic. Awesome. What year?
1969. It cost $3.
Did you have that ticket stub?
No, I don't. Yeah. They played from midnight until 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that show. Yeah, I heard about that show. Well, as far as I'm concerned, if we were awarding a winner, you would be the winner today. That's it, Mike. Thank you for the phone call. We're gonna end on that point. I don't think you can do any better than that. Led Zeppelin at the Kinetic Playground. Wow. All right, 312-332-3776. Getting back to sports, we'll talk White Sox, Cubs. We'll eventually get to some audio from Coach Eberflus on Justin Fields. As we're still just hoping for the best, that they've made some good moves, and we're going to see some progress this year, Brian.
Yeah, early OTAs, you can't tell much, but we know that Tevin Jenkins is now a backup and a backup right tackle.
So that speaks volumes. 312-332-3776. Back at it after this with Xander and Hanley on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Xander and Hanley here on ESPN 1000 up until 12:30. Tyler Aki with pregame show. Leading into White Sox baseball, Connor McKnight on the play-by-play with DJ today. First pitch against the Rangers at 1:10. Yesterday on the south side, it certainly was interesting. Was four fire Tonys on the TV broadcast where Jason and Steve just stepped out and let the audio
sound
breathe.
Yeah, let natural sound. We'll just enjoy the field.
Natural ambiance of Guaranteed Rate Field yesterday. We've got Kopech on the mound today. And
Big start for Michael Kopech.
Last start was good.
You know, the December 6th, 2016 trade of Chris Sale to Boston, and you got Kopech and Mankata, and at the time Mankata was the guy everyone was supposed to be excited about, and here we are 6 years later and Michael Kopech's the guy. Johan Mankata,
certainly at the moment he is.
Well, I mean,
right, it's probably going to stay that way, but it, as you said, it didn't start out that way. We waited a long time on Michael.
I saw this various things. But you gotta be excited about what you've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
Mankata to this point, since May 14th, no home runs, batting 133 if you like old school batting averages. Of 302 baseball players with 90 or more at bats so far, there's 302 of them, right, that qualify. So batting average, OBP, and slugging, he's 302nd in all three categories. $17 million a year. That puts it in perspective for him.
It does.
And if he's hurt, then put him on the IL.
You've got to wonder if he's not hurt enough and Tony's just trying to get him reps to get better on the job, or is this because TA's already on and they just need the body? He's not in the lineup today. But you just wonder when we are going to see the Yoan that we saw in 2019. Are we going to see the Yoan that we saw in 2019?
And he's coming off the 0-for-5, so he's not in there today. 0-for-5, 3 strikeouts. So Tony didn't lose that game last night. It was Giolito frittering away 4 runs with a 5-run lead. By the way, our friend Jim Lex, I wondered what the win probability at that point
was. I'm glad you mentioned that.
95.1, which he worked at a frequency there. 95.1%, according to Jim's ESPN stats on the box score, and when they're up 7-4, it was 89, almost 90% chance of winning.
Certainly
that game.
Winnable. Certainly
absolutely
winnable. And that
you
did
bank
not.
That.
Yes, absolutely. And it didn't work out. And look, you mentioned Giolito. Garcia had a part of it. That fielding mistake tied it up. And then the bullpen, the thing that we were supposed to be sure of this year. We're not sure of. Here's some audio on the post game, including some comments on the noise the crowd was making yesterday at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Well, I hear it with one ear and I see it with one eye. So I just know I appreciate that they want us to win, and when we don't win, they're unhappy.
Fans are going to have their own opinions, a lot of colorful opinions at times. For us, we focus on. Put a little bubble around it, focus on the game. We're trying to you know, trying to keep it close there in extra innings and trying to mount that comeback. Just fell short.
They had a right to voice their opinion. I mean, they're coming to the game, and they can say whatever they want. I know this clubhouse is a family, and we're going to stick together no matter what. So, you can have outside opinions, but this clubhouse, we're tight, and it's a family.
We have the team with what we have to win, and we're losing games. And no man in the clubhouse, including manager and coaches, are happy. So, I like it when they care enough to be upset.
312-332-3776. I like what Tony said there to end that clip, and I certainly like what Jake Berger said. Fans spend their money. They get the right to do that. And you wonder if they're going to stop showing up, because that's what we do on the South Side when we don't like what's happening.
Well, now, Mark, you also heard Berger say, we're talking about how the Phillies were having a celebration, popping champagne when Girardi was fired. I literally could hear the cheering from the clubhouse in the media room when the announcement was being made. And Jake Berger, and he's not the only one through the tough times, and there have been too many of them in this season for the Sox, mm-hmm. who've said we're close, can't be closer. So at least they're saying the right thing, and he sincerely sounded like they're not listening to any of it. But, if it continues, do the players start feeling differently about it? And they're going on the road, and the fact that they're going to get some quiet, peace and quiet on the road compared to the home crowd last night tells you all you need to know about the Sox season.
And you wonder when the players start realizing, it's a grind. We're not in their shoes, and I get it, and they have to take it game by game. They have to flush yesterday, look forward to today. But when do they step back and say, you know what, we have the right pieces here to do better than we are, and here are our frustrations, and the time is limited. The window is only open for so long. And they start making some noise about things that they think may need to be adjusted, like the coaching staff.
Well, how about just looking in the mirror and saying, I'm Yoan Moncada, and I was disappointed when he's bringing up the injury. So that tells me he shouldn't be blamed, as he's talking about how
You're right there. He should not be saying that. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. He wants to get the rhythm back. If you're out there playing, I don't want to hear about your limitations. All right. Either you go to them and tell them I'm not ready to play because the oblique is still bothering me.
Right. Or fight through it and
do something and perform. And earn your $17 million because Rondell's starting to turn the corner. Okay, we need to see a lot more than a couple games, but thank God we saw a couple games, and now he might be going to the IL. And we thought maybe the call-up today was because Grandal's going on the IL. We need a moment of silence for Yermin Mercedes.
Yeah, he was DFA'd.
He wasn't your Twitter poll either. He was on the 40-man roster.
No, he wasn't, right. Here's what the moves are today. Aaron Bummer placed on the IL with a left lat strain. Second time he's been on the IL this year.
That's why we didn't see him
yesterday. Yeah. Davis Martin optioned. So he goes back down, which, I like what we saw from the kid. Sure. I think he's going to be an option to stay up here for a while in the future. Tanner Banks and Sebi Zavala called up to make room for Zavala on the 40-man. Yermin Mercedes was designated for assignment. Yasmani Grandal not placed on the IL.
So far. How about Mercedes was, 28 when he came up and lit the place on fire for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and then Tony, told him stop showboating.
Yep. Yeah. Fun storyline.
And now, I mean, part of that whole storyline was that he was a grinder, and every time he thought he was going to quit the minor leagues, his family told him to stick with it, and he did. And he had his moment in the sun, the big spotlight, the big stage. I wonder if he's out of baseball now. I mean, is anyone going to take a flyer on a guy who's 30 or whatever he is now? And hasn't been a contributor since that little flash we saw.
Right. I don't know. I certainly wish for him, somebody who seems like he is willing to grind it out, that somebody else picks him up and he has a chance to do something, to play as long as he wants to play, not to have it decided for him.
Yeah. Right.
312-332-3776. The Twitter poll is up there talking about being DFA'd, and we're talking about, the major league roster here. When Tim Anderson comes back, we are going to have to make a decision, right? You've got Jake Berger, you've got Yoan Moncada, you've got Tim, you've got Josh Harrison, you've got Leury Garcia. If DFA was an option, would you DFA Josh Harrison, Leury Garcia, or leave them both alone? That's the Twitter poll at ESPN 1000. I made a case.
I wanted to launch both of them, but that's just
me. Yeah, but if you had to pick one, I made a case for Leury, and you made a case for Josh Harrison. I mean, it's splitting hairs at this point, but when TA comes back. And you really, I mean, yes. And I realize that there is a case for both of them, but for argument's sake.
Right.
Now, when TA comes back and say Yoan is hopefully starting to hit, and we still have to find a place for Berger because of his bat being so hot. He's got the most home runs on the team. I say Mendick has shown us enough to want to put him at second base daily.
I want to see as much of him right now as I can.
Absolutely.
And I wish I believed that Moncada is going to turn this around. Look, his on base last year was 375, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just the numbers are bleaker than bleak. And if it's the oblique, then do something about it. And
nice.
If it's not, you know,
nice. You worked on it all day in rehearsal.
I did. I was up all night at the Kinetic Playground watching a show, yeah, thinking about some lines.
You wish.
Yeah.
312-332-3776. We'll take a break here, come back, talk about baseball. We'll touch upon, we've got some more audio from the Cubs that we can get to. And we eventually get around to talking about the Bears because, you know, there's a few things to talk about this week at OTAs. It's ESPN 1000, Xander and Hanley. We'll be right back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
You can watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Brian Hanley, you still haven't watched the Get Back series. At this time, you should just save it for winter.
I will, because I like to spend a lot of time outside when it's, it's going to be 95. I'm not going to complain about that because our spring was so terrible.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I don't. Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, I save that stuff. Even though I watched the first Peaky Blinders of the second half of the last season last night.
I don't even know what that is, but okay.
You don't know what Peaky Blinders is?
It sounds like you're staring at your neighbors and you shouldn't.
No. You need, and now that's another one to put on your list. No okay. Need to ask questions. Just put it on your list.
All right. Yeah. But this the summertime is, you know, watch the Cubs and Sox suck, and then go out and try to enjoy a nice sunset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And beer.
Beer.
Yeah. Yeah. 312-332-3776. Dean wants to jump in, talk about the Sox. Hey, Dean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking me a call.
Yeah.
I can't watch the games anymore. I'm a huge Sox fan. And, the one that threw me off the most was last Sunday's game against Tampa Bay. I don't know if you recall it. And the Sox won. Okay, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as Mike Grindel is playing first base, you know, Tony's getting creative. He's putting him out there, getting him out from behind the plate. He has a critical error
in
about the fifth or sixth inning.
I remember.
And it was just a simple throwing. You know, it came over from either short or second. And he just handcuffed him. And Tampa Bay picked up, I think, about maybe 2 unearned runs in that inning. 6-5 ball game. And, you know, the camera's panning the field. And I see Grandal at first base in the ninth inning in a 6-5 game. And I'm like, what is going on?
Hold on, yeah.
And Sheets is on the bench. You know, I had to look it up to see if Sheets had been sent down, but he's on the bench.
And now he's been sent down. Yeah.
Now he's been sent down. Yeah. But, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, if we had lost that game, if Grindel had made another error in the ninth inning, a catcher playing first base, when you get a defensive replacement with a 6-5 game, he would have been fired on the spot.
Well, should have been, but wouldn't be. Yeah,
right.
And ball players, I mean, we're not stupid. I mean, when I say we, it was a long time ago, but ball players look at that stuff and say, wait a second, that's just not a good move. You know, they start second guessing. And I'm not saying that's going on with the White Sox, but, you know, there's some.
But you've got to wonder. That's a good point to bring up. You've got to wonder if other people on the bench are noticing, like, what is going on? And that's and that's one of those things that Tony. It could have made a mistake, but he didn't because we won. But there have been many other things that he hasn't done that has resulted in a loss, maybe directly.
Okay, so when you have a bench coach or coaches, does Tony not want to hear from them? Are they afraid to? Are they afraid to tell Tony, hey, maybe we can make a move here because, you know, it's a one-run game in the ninth inning? And
see,
or is it Tony?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's what Duncan's for. That's why he brought Duncan in. That's why he brought Miguel Cairo in. And I think that they're honestly afraid to say something to him, like, hey, you know, he made an error earlier in the game. Sheets is right here. And it's just all of a sudden you get into this mindset, like, you know, let's just let it play it out. And, you know, I even called you guys up, and I talked to, I forget who the announcer was. And he said, you know, Dean, well, Tony believes in, you know, letting people have a second chance. And I'm like, no, absolutely not.
Well, he's got a second chance, so he'd be kind of a hypocrite if he didn't allow for second chances, right?
Yeah. The other point, I mean, that was glaring. But the other point is the bullpen. I mean, I was pushing, believe it or not, when the Sox were looking for a manager, I was pushing for Ned Yost, the old Kansas City manager, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the old Brewers manager, right? Yeah,
exactly. Feisty guy, right? He's a catcher, and he knows the game really well. But the thing that he did in Kansas City, he had his bullpen and bullpen assignments. This isn't rocket science. Sixth inning is Foster. Seventh inning is Bummer. Eighth inning is Graveman. Ninth inning is Hendricks. And you tell your starters, look, guys, I just get me through the fifth. And in La Russa's defense,
and I would say get me to the sixth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But your starters minimum should be able to get you through the fifth. They should be. I mean, we've got a good starting staff.
Right, right.
And in La Russa's defense, I mean, he hasn't had the lead. And that, you know, that's another issue. I'm so upset with Han because Han did nothing in the offseason to balance this lineup. I looked at it and said, he did nothing to get a left-handed hitter in that lineup.
Absolutely. It's a glaring error.
Yep.
Austin Meadows was available. Schwarber was available. I'll take his 16 home runs and hit 200. I'll take that. But, you know, the last thing, and the way I look at it, the only way they're going to salvage this season, La Russa's got to go, replace him with Pierzynski. I mean, that's the buzz. But here's the trade. You guys are going to say I'm absolutely crazy with this. Could you imagine trading Moncada and Jimenez to Kansas City for Benintendi and Merrifield? And Kansas City might make that move because they can't sign either one of them.
And well, why would they put, you would have to pay 80% of Moncada's salary if not more.
Yeah. Yeah, he's due for $15 million next year.
He's making $17 million. He goes up to $20 next year, and then it's like $24 million. It's ridiculous.
And those guys are a little older.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think we could actually do better with him in a trade.
Well, and I don't think Kansas City would be interested in either one of them right now.
Yeah, maybe.
Or Kansas State. Yeah.
Yeah, no,
thanks,
I agree
Dean.
With you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Dean.
Yep, okay.
Appreciate
right,
it.
Thanks.
Great thoughts. Great call from Dean. Look,
are you done with Reese McGuire? I don't think I need to see any more of Reese McGuire.
He's not bothering me so much. What's bothering you?
His defense and offense.
Well, he did come here being a defensive, allegedly an upgrade.
He framed pitches. Yeah. But I mean, he can't catch the ball.
He's had his issues. But he actually didn't have a double yesterday? I believe he had a double. So, yeah, with a team full of issues, that one rates low on my list.
He can fly under the radar right now.
Yeah,
that's
the thing. He can.
Yeah.
And he is because there's so many other things.
We're talking about a catcher playing first base in Yasmani. It's just like their catching situation less than what you would call stellar.
Yeah. Upgrades in catching and, you know, that left-handed stud bat because we cannot. That you cannot count on Leori from the left-hand side being an everyday player no matter what side he's batting on. And Moncada has just been an empty promise so far.
Yeah.
312-332-3776. We'll take a break, come back in a couple minutes, and we'll touch upon some Bears before we get out of here. 12:30.
I want to hear Anthony Rizzo. He had thoughts about his former team.
Yes, we'll hear that too. We've got some audio we've yet to get to. We've had a busy, busy show. We'll do all that by the time we get out of here at 12:30, where Tyler Aki picks it up with the pregame show at 12:30, and then we get into Sox Rangers here on ESPN 1000, first pitch at 1:10.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Hadley and Xander, ESPN 1000 up until 12:30. Got some Cubs audio to play for you here. Brian, what do you want to hear? Do you want to hear Rizzo on comparing the Yankees to the 2016 Cubs or being top market?
Rizzo was part of the Bronx Bombers' six solo home runs he got in the act yesterday. DJ LeMahieu, arguably Theo Epstein's worst trade as a Hawks GM, as a Cubs president. He threw him in for the Ian Stewart trade, and Ian Stewart was a pain in the rear end. He, you know, got hurt, didn't want to be around the team, just wanted to collect his money. And LeMahieu has turned out to be an elite ball player. But, you know, of course, when the Chicago media arrived on Friday, they had a little sit down in the dugout with Anthony, and Anthony's singing the praises of the Yankees and the expectations to compete and win a World Series every year, and they're the best team in baseball. And then there's Tom Ricketts' Chicago Cubs.
It's a lot of fun, this team. I mean, we're a really good, complete team. And you try to – you go off your past experiences. I try not to compare things, but, I mean, yesterday is a prime example of just a championship team of – our ace gives up a bunch of runs, and in the dugout, we're just, all right, here we go. Not even like a let's go get them. It's just we all just gave each other the look. And there was a game in Arizona in 16 that Lackey was pitching early in the season, very similar. He gave up a bunch of runs, and we all just looked at each other and said, here we go. And it's just that confidence that we've built now that we know we can do something special. A lot of things have to go your way, but we have that team.
And that is Anthony Rizzo, a very svelte Anthony Rizzo these days.
Yeah, and you wonder if the getting even in better shape comes with looking around the clubhouse and being a leader in that clubhouse and, you know, referencing John Lackey gets in a situation and that team knew it was good enough, the Cubs team, that would win a World Series. Just no rah-rah, just look at each other. All right, let's go. We got a little hole here that we've dug. Let's get out of it. And when you watch the Cubs and Matt Swarmer last night against the best team in baseball with their 94 home runs, and they can just, you know, hammer people whenever they feel like it. It just, as a Cubs fan, you just, that tells you how far away the Cubs are from stars and stars who are going to get you to the promised land. And it's going to be a long haul for Jed Hoyer to put this thing together to, you know, as other teams like the Yankees and Dodgers continue to strive for excellence, they're not going away, right? So
right.
There's a lot of teams on that list, too.
Yeah, so. Let's hear Anthony Rizzo also had something to say about the Cubs at this point.
It's better for the game, I think, when the big teams are playing at a premium. It's just better for baseball. It's better for the overall experience when you turn on a game and it's, you know, Yankees, Red Sox, and we're battling for first place in June, but it seems like it's October. That's good for baseball. And all the big markets, you know, have plenty of money to spend. And I mean, a team like the Cubs should be competing every single year at a very high payroll, but there will be years like this where, you know, last year we had a high payroll there, sold. This year they sign some guys and have a good team. It's not like you're just going to go and roll over anyone by any means. So it's just a different year than the normal standard that we created there over the last seven years.
Yeah, it's a little different here on the north side than what it was years ago. And Anthony failed to mention that he didn't take the big contract when it was presented to him, allegedly.
Right. And he left money on the table. 5 years, $75 million the Cubs offered. And Jed did, too. And I believed him at the time. He said he can sleep well at night knowing that he gave them market or maybe even better than market offers. I mean, Anthony just signed a two-year extension for $32 million with the Yankees. So that's, you know, that's about the same annual salary, but a few years short of what the Cubs are offering. And the fact that he just said, there'll be years like this. There doesn't have to be. That is a decision. That is a choice that ownership has made to sell off and go from a top five payroll to a middle of the pack payroll. And yet, Mark, they draw 30 to 32,000 a game and they're hundreds of millions of dollars under what they were spending. So the profit?
The business plan is working out well, isn't it?
Looks just fine.
It doesn't need to include winning.
It doesn't have to be $41,000 in the ballpark if you're spending $100+ million less on your talent, right? Mm-hmm. So you bank that, and then most teams would kill for 30,000 people every single day, right?
It's like the 80s all over again on the north side.
Yep.
Where people are showing up and, will they speak with their wallets when they're disappointed at what happened this year? Look, it's a fine sunny day. I know they're in New York, but if they were here today, the place would be packed because it's something to do on a nice summer day. We only have so many nice days here in Chicagoland to work with.
And, and the two guys they did sign, by the way, Marcus Stroman's on the IL. And this one's a little Seiya Suzuki's finger. He was supposedly going to be back like in the next few days. And now yesterday they were talking about it's not nearly healed like they hoped it'd be. And so Jed Hoyer's on the trip was going to sit down with Suzuki and the doctors. And they said at this point, surgery doesn't seem to be an option or necessary. But the fact that they even mentioned that tells you that this is his left ring finger is mangled from sliding in a second awkwardly. And so your $85 million signing and was great for the first, he was player
of
the month.
It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, rookie of the month. No, he'll be, he's going to be fine. Right. But
let's not forget, before the injury, it fell off the table because the league had figured him out.
Right, exactly right. And, and last night you got 2019 Matt Swarmer, who gave up 36 home runs and 27 Iowa starts. And looked so good the first two starts, but he's got to react. And obviously the Yankees had scouted him well and looked at the video, and they're waiting for that slider. And they were sending it at 120 miles an hour outside the ground. So.
Yeah, we've got some post-game audio featuring Coach David Ross and Swarmer here.
Kind of execute my pitches well, just getting behind hitters sometimes and leaving the ball up in the zone. I just got to do a better job executing, and hopefully better things happen next start.
Definitely seen him better, yeah. Solo shots, I guess that's better than walks. This guy's got some powerful swings and, some big, strong guys. They have the potential to put up some numbers with one swing of the bat, and they did that today.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Yeah, have a lot of power hitters for sure. I'm just going to try to limit damage next time when things start in the fan. And I'll just try to make them feel more uncomfortable up there instead of they just seem like they saw the ball well. And I just got to do a lot better moving forward.
Wait, music after a shutout? How dare they?
Well, and Jesse Rogers said, you felt bad for the kid. He stood up and answered the questions. Jesse said, he's just like, God, this guy wanted to be anywhere but there.
Wanted to puke,
Yeah, he wanted to be anywhere but on the mound, and he had to give him five innings even with the home runs because their bullpen had been beaten up. And look, the Yankees have 21 home runs in the last eight games. 94 on the year. Aaron Judge has 24.
He's a monster. He's an absolute monster. Where is he going to end up?
Well, how about this? He's in good company. So he has 24 through 59 games.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth had 26 in 1928 through 59 games. Mickey Mantle had 25 in 1956.
Wow.
I mean, you're talking about two names. When you start talking baseball, those are two of the first three names you're talking
about. You don't have to know much about baseball to know who those two are.
Exactly right.
Right.
It happens, but, there are miles to go before we sleep as Cub fans, because if that's the standard, Lord help us all.
Yeah, and Stanton is a monster too. It's just unfair. Those guys bat next to each other in the lineup in the Bronx. Everybody playing them. That shot yesterday is unbelievable. All right, so 312-332-3776. Getting out of here at 12:30. Do we want to hit on this bear stuff, Jake?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't we... We've got some audio here. Let's hit this before the break. Couple of things that Coach Eberflus had to say regarding Justin Fields, our most favorite subject with the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I would just say that Luke and Andrew are doing a great job with the footwork and the timing. That's to me, it jumps out Like, you just ask that question, I just, boom, right there. That's no question. You see it in the drill work.
Than what you had seen on film.
Yes, absolutely. You can see it in the drill work. You can see them taking it from the drill work to the you know, 11-on-11 reps. And that's clearly getting better. So I'm excited about that.
Now, that's exciting, right? That sounds good from Coach Eberflus, right? Very, very rosy picture for Justin Fields, Brian.
Yeah, because he's coach positive, and you know, why wouldn't
he
be?
But it sounds a little different than Nagy, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. I mean, first of all, you don't get lost in the vocabulary. And
miles
the
of difference, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, look. I'm hoping that they finally got it right. You know, Bill Polian led them in the right direction, and they've got the GM in place, and hopefully in Eberflus, the head coach. And I'm hoping against hope, more importantly, that Justin Fields is a lot better than we saw under the old regime and gets better opportunity and more structure and better play calling and better everything, right? Better preparation, actually. Let him take snaps in training camp instead of, oh, well, I guess we'll start him. And we didn't do a thing in training camp. Good luck, Justin. Go on out there. But everyone's seeing former players, current players. You just heard it from the coach. Everyone loves his work ethic. Everyone likes all the stuff that goes along with being a leader on a team. But we still don't know how good he's going to be because he hasn't had the best opportunity to prove it to this point.
But wait, there's more.
I can really probably compare this to Dak the most because he was young like this when I was there as a rookie and then a second-year player. And we saw him just grow before our eyes. And he's a talent, you know, he's a guy that can, you know, throw on time but also make, you know, extended plays and throw down the field. And that's where I see, you know, where Justin is. And I'm not trying to compare those two players. They're different players, but certainly you can see the jump that we're going to make here with Justin. And I can see those things as he starts to mature in the offense.
Hey, we have every reason to believe Coach Eberflus at this, you know, at this point, until proven otherwise. I know we've been hurt. I know we're damaged by previous administrations, but I'll choose to see the sunny side.
Well, and I would also suggest that by when it's all said and done, I hope he has a higher ceiling than Dak Prescott.
True.
You know,
true.
I mean, it would if that's a ceiling, then, you know, you live with it. It's good enough to be a wild card team, whatever. But if you want to win a Super Bowl, I think you need to be more consistent than Prescott. And, you know, Cole Kmet said he's already seen inside the huddle the way that Justin Fields commands the huddle now. There's some growth already there. But it's the, you know, the arm strength, the nose, you know what you're seeing when you're looking at it, know when to get the ball out of your hand, whether he's going to have enough protection or enough running game or enough weapons to catch the ball. Well, we'll have to see. It's not going to happen this year, but, you know, you got to hope that he's the guy. Just have to hope he's the guy.
Yeah, baby steps, enough to notice a positive turn of events. That's what we can hope for.
And you hope Luke Getsky doesn't have to fire himself or get fired as a play caller.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be a change of pace. 312-332-3776. We've got one more segment. Then we get to Tyler Aki with the pregame show here on ESPN 1000 leading up to first pitch as Kopech's on the mound, taking on the Rangers, hoping to grab one today, which means we win the series. We need to. It's Hanley and Zander here on ESPN 1000. Hanley and Zander, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2 and on the ESPN Chicago app. Comprehensive app filled with sports content. It will take you all day and then some to get through it all. Many days. Very easy to use as well. So we've got Kopech versus Gray. We talked about the lineup today. Pollock is leading off, Brian. We've got Engel in right field. Garcia is playing second base. No Josh Harrison today. Mendick is at short. At least we've got somebody who is hitting in the leadoff position. Pollock's starting to show what he can do.
Yeah, don't need to see Lurie or Yasmani up there anymore. Thank you very much.
Yeah, unfortunately, I get what he was doing. He was trying to jumpstart him. That just doesn't seem to be the appropriate stage to do that.
No. I mean,
to give that kind of responsibility to see if somebody can respond, I don't know. Don't like it. The Yasmani thing, oddly enough, bothered me less at the time because that that seemed like, you know, Yasmani being a guy who's been around, he's been a starter, he's been an all-star, all that. He didn't step up to the challenge, but he was trying to heat up his bat. Leori is just, he's been given way too much responsibility. And unfortunately, yeah, we need him right now because we're short.
Unfortunately, he gave him a three-year contract, too.
And so that's unfortunate as well. That was a big signing in the offseason. It's like, are you kidding me? Really?
I mean,
I was waiting to hear a name.
Right. And here's, you know, it's look, it's lunch money when you look around. It's $5.5 million a year, but it's 16.5 guaranteed. And as you said, you know, you want to see him as a spot player, as a, you know, fill-in guy. You don't want to see him leading off, and you drop him down to eighth, and he goes 3-for-3 and scores a few runs. That's great, but you don't, because he's being paid as if he's going to be a big contributor, doesn't mean
he's going to rise up to the occasion and do that. Right.
But again, he's on the list of problems, certainly, but the Yoan Moncadas of the world and Grandal, and up and down you go. Now Giolito, for the last few starts, hasn't been good enough that, and yet what he needs to be. Huge start for Michael Kopech today. They got to win this game, and they got to get out of town on a winning note, and then they get, you know, 7 games away from the crowd that's getting a little disenchanted with everything.
Yeah, just a little bit, right? All right, so what are the odds today that we're going to hear that chant to get at some point?
Oh, see, then that means things are going south again, right? And right, by the way, they did the wave in the fifth inning. You know, that's not a good
sign.
The
Tony wave?
No, it wasn't waving goodbye to Tony. It was the wave because it was 5-0, and I guess people were getting bored, and then it's 5-4, and ooh, we got yourself a game.
Yeah, did it on Friday, too, before Seager hit that homer, and then it followed up with the fire Tony.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, so I say we may be 3-for-3 today. By the way, I got to call out our very own Jay Cantu. By birth, he is a fan of what team?
The Texas Rangers.
Texas Rangers, yeah. I've been hiding it the whole time.
Say it loud
and proud. No, because we blew two Worlds, and I'll say the we, because I feel like I've earned suffering that much. Two World Series back-to-back that I just, it's just like, I don't know, a disease at this point.
Well, it's heartbreaking to be a fan.
I grew up a Cubs fan. We didn't sniff a World Series until I was 56. Come on. What are you talking about?
Right, what are you complaining about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did. We were up against Detroit.
It's Jake problems, right?
It was a best of five. You win two games at Wrigley, and you go, you just win one in San Diego, and you can't do that. I mean, come on. So, Jake, you know, you're way ahead of the
you're
curve.
You're doing okay. Could be much worse.
I guess I got a brand-new AC stadium out of it, so.
Hey, were you the one driving the car with the horns, the Hook'em horns on that Mark saw coming in today?
Yeah, the Hook'em horns.
Yeah, yeah, I got the new Illinois license plate today, so trying to blend in with the crowd.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah, good luck with that. I mean, these horns were like, they were bolted to the hood. It's like, this is not something that they're used doing for a day. This was making a statement.
We like to ride horses in Texas. We don't drive cars.
How old was the car that you would bolt horns? Seriously,
it was no more than 6-7 years old. It was really funny. I drove by and it's like, what is that? Illinois plates? What is going on?
I thought it was the Benny Bullmobile.
Hey, look, it may have been, and he was out of costume.
They're not allowed to. You can't see the mascot with the head off.
They're not supposed to talk either.
They're not supposed to talk.
No talking.
No talking.
No talking.
You just swing the 50-pound bag of popcorn all over the people each game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell you what, the Benny the Bulls have been pretty good over the years. And when I saw how much they were paying one of the original Benny the Bulls at the United Center, some kid who I think was a gymnast in Oregon or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a hell of an entertainer. I think he was making $250,000.
I got some inside sources on that, yeah.
No kidding.
Yep.
I never heard about that.
Not the one who was selling weed. That was not Benny the Bull. That was the other one. What was the other bull, the other mascot? He ride the scooter around, I think, Chicago Fest or Taste of Chicago, and he got busted because he was selling weed or whatever.
But yeah, I vaguely remember that.
I don't know how much I can say, but I knew a friend from high school. He was, well, he did announce it. He was the Longhorn, one of the Texas Longhorn mascots. And, you know, he would tell me, he was telling me the stuff that they would do throughout the year, you know, different conventions, flying him out to LA. So amazing.
A lot of personal appearance money.
And then, then you get the secrets on the salaries, and you're like, well, maybe I could not talk for a living.
Maybe DePaul should have a program for mascots. You know, and the San Diego Chicken, who was, you know, number one.
That's probably the most famous in the history of mascots.
Until he started tackling women, and then then they had some issues.
Wait, and didn't Morgana, she wasn't really a mascot, but she could have been one. Yeah. Does anybody remember her beyond Brian and me? No, Jason's like, what are you talking about? Look up Morgana. Morgan, A-N-A.
She with the enhanced...
was very enhanced. And she would run out onto the field and kiss all the players.
Kiss all the players.
He's looking it up right now.
We'll see if they get a filter on the computer.
Yeah, be careful. All right, so we've got a Twitter poll to wrap up here on ESPN 1000. Once Tim Anderson comes back healthy and you had your choice as GM, you play Rick Hahn for the day, who would you DFA? And you have to pick one of these because the obvious answer might be both. But we need players. That's the problem. Josh Harrison, Larry Garcia. The other one is other. Don't move them. Now, somebody did reply, Hayward. And I know you're a fan of that, Brian.
It wasn't me.
Wrong side of town. But, yes, we understand what you mean.
Well, now that Suzuki's not coming back anytime soon, he got a reprieve. Right?
Yeah. So. And then somebody else replied, TLR. Not sure you could DFA TLR. Designated for assignment.
All roads lead back to fire Tony.
Yeah, so you want to wrap that up, Jake? What was the final on that?
Or are you checking Rangers statistics?
No, he's checking Morgana. Get off that page already.
I did put up some John Gray statistics, though, for us. But for the poll, Josh Harrison leads it all with 64.3% and Larry Garcia with 26.8%. And then my ride in the other 8.9%.
Why does Harrison have such a big target on his back? I don't understand that. It should be a little closer than that.
Should be. I mean, like you said, he was an all-star in 2014. Right. Now that's a while back.
Right. No, it is. It is. But he also brings that energy. And has he played enough to play himself out of this funk? I don't think so. And he's, again, not in the lineup today.
Yeah.
And he's got the most triples on the team, Jake told me.
Well, there you go.
There's something.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, we're going to wrap this up. Tyler Aki's got the pregame show next. Leading up to Connor McKnight and DJ with the play-by-play here on ESPN 1000. First pitch against the Rangers. 110, Kopech versus John Gray. And we're hoping
thanks
for
everyone who weighed in today and joined us. And thank you,
a lot of phone calls. Thank you, Jake. And thanks, Brian. We'll end up talking to you again next week. And hopefully it's all positive stuff about the White Sox.
I'm sure it will be.
Yeah, we hope. All right. For Hanley, it's Xander. This is ESPN 1000.